We are in the season of Easter, which really is the most wonderful and the most central time in the whole Christian year. So I'm reading to you Luke's version of Resurrection Morning. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee. The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. It's always a delight to come and share with people in this season, because it really is the most wonderful and the most central season of the whole Christian year. And to share with a church at any time of the year is wonderful, but at Easter there's another dimension to it entirely. And so I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Now here's a story. Now the story is set just after the Second World War, and it's at the Portsmouth Dockyard. Now one day, a Ministry of Defense policeman who was guarding the gate noticed a worker who was leaving the dockyard pushing a wheelbarrow with a very suspicious-looking package in it. The policeman was suspicious enough to ask to see what was in the package. When he opened it up, he found it had bits of rag and sawdust and assorted bits of rubbish. And he was puzzled, because the next day, the same worker was also pushing a wheelbarrow out through the gate with another suspicious package on it. And once again, the policeman asked to see the package, and he opened it up, and all it was rubbish and floor sweepings and no bits of wood and rag. Nothing of any value. And the same thing happened day after day, and eventually the policeman began to be obsessed. He knew something strange was going on, but he could not grasp what it was. And so eventually he said to the man, "I give up. I know you are up to something, but I cannot tell what. Please, I promise not to arrest you. I promise. I won't arrest you, but put me out of my misery and tell me what you are stealing." And the worker smiled, leaned towards the policeman, and said, "I'm stealing wheelbarrows." Now, some things in life are almost too obvious to see, and they're easily missed. The policeman was convinced that what was being stolen was in the wheelbarrow. It never occurred to him that it was the wheelbarrow itself that was being stolen. To do so meant would have been thinking, literally in this case, outside the box. And to look at it in a completely different way. And the Easter stories are full of people who are a little bit like that policeman. People who keep getting the wrong end of the stick. Mary thinks Jesus' body has been stolen. Peter sees the linen wrappings and can't work out what it's about. The disciples on the road to Emmaus cannot see him, even as he walks along with them. The angels question Mary, and she still doesn't know what is going on. And then she thinks he's the gardener. Then it seems she reaches out to cling onto him, and he tells her that she mustn't. You could hardly get more misunderstandings in one short story if you tried. And the point is that Easter burst into the world, and the minds and the imaginations of the disciples were just too small to contain it. And can we entirely blame them? I suspect that we would have done no better. How do you even begin to understand something like the resurrection? We may as well try to fit the ocean into a jam jar, trying to get our minds around something which is so completely outside human experience. And yet, the puzzlement and the confusion of the disciples is, to me, a real mark of the story's authenticity and truth. If someone had been making the whole thing up, they would not have had such a muddle going on. Nobody would have made up the extraordinary fact that Jesus is almost not immediately recognized, either here in the garden or in the evening on the road to Emmaus, or a later time cooking breakfast by the shore. In short, the first Christians were not prepared for what happened. Nobody could have been prepared. No matter how many times Jesus might have forewarned them, they still could not have been prepared for something like this. And it is to the amazing credit of the gospel writers that they don't try to smooth, but record the confusion and the questions and all the rest of it. And to me, as I've said, this to me speaks of the story's authenticity and truth. But the most stunning mark to me of the truth of the story is the fact that the resurrection was first experienced by the women. And let's be very blunt here. If the story were just made up, the gospel writers in that male culture would never in a million years have entrusted news of the resurrection to the women. They would not have done so, because the testimony of women in any legal form in those days counted for nothing, weren't important. So if we were making the story up, primary witnesses would not have been the women, but the men. The fact that it's not the men, but the women, is so unlikely that it really has the ring of truth about it, because it's not the way you would write it. So you have t- two aspects, the confusion of the disciples and the fact that women are the first witnesses. So unlikely, but recorded. And to me, those are really marks that what we're reading about really happened. Now, when the women go to the tomb and find the stone rolled away, they're first baffled. Of course they're baffled. I'd be baffled. And when the two men in dazzling clothes appear, they're terrified. Terrified. Because they know somehow that they are on holy ground, but they are not able to comprehend what all this might mean. But they do remember in the back of their minds that somehow Jesus had foretold all this. Had he not said on more than one occasion that this must happen? So the women hurry back to tell the others what they have seen. The women, the first witnesses, the first preachers of the resurrection. Now, I think we can safely say that this is the birth of their faith in the resurrection. The women are not just the first to see the empty tomb, they're also the first to believe, even if that belief is still in the form of a little seed. They have, it seemed, traveled the infinite distance between death and life in the space of one early morning. But the 11, being men, find the whole story implausible. As the NIV puts it, they thought it was all nonsense. They had forgotten the things that Jesus had said, or if they remembered at all, it was as if it belonged to a lost era on the far side of Good Friday. Yet in one of them at least, something stirs. Peter, of course it's Peter. Who else would it be? In him, at least, something stirs. And he runs. It's not yet faith. More a puzzled question. Maybe the first glimmer of a possibility. But he has to know. And he runs. And there's a lovely phrase that's used by the novelist and poet Thomas Hardy. And he wrote a poem called The Oxen, which is all about Christmas. And he uses a phrase, which I think is a phrase, hoping it be so. And I always think of Peter when he runs to the tomb. He is running to the tomb, hoping it might be so. What the women had reported. And it drives him to this place. And because of the urgency, he walk, he runs. And when he gets there, he looks straight in. And here's a little by the by. Have you ever wondered why the stone was rolled away? It wasn't to let Jesus out. It was to let us look in. And there he is. And here a threshold is crossed, not only of the burial cave, but of Peter's whole life. From now on, same for this man. From what he will see, his life now is going to be utterly different. It will change him forever as he takes in the evidence for himself. But still, Luke will not say that he believes. He will say only that he was amazed at what happened. Peter, it seems, is poised, if you like, between unbelief and faith. He was at that halfway house between knowing that the tomb is empty, but not yet really believing that Christ is risen. For him, the full flowering of faith has yet to come. And this last chapter, if I had continued to read for the rest of chapter 24, there would be three more resurrection stories you would have heard. The next story relates how two travelers meet the risen Jesus on the road to Emmaus and invite them into their home. And as their guest breaks the bread, they recognize him And this inward event Luke described as hearts burning within us. And the second story tells how Jesus finally appears to 11 with the greeting, "Peace be with you." And we might have expected this meeting to be one of unclouded exhilaration and joy, because they all knew that he really was alive. But even then, his arrival is met with a more complex response. Luke says that even when he had appeared among them, the disciples are startled and terrified, he says. And in a marvelous phrase, he captures their confusion. Luke says, in their joy, they were disbelieving and still wondering. And to me, again, this strikes me as so true. Because in the face of something like this, is that not exactly how we would be? It's as if the morning has still not finally broken. Faith, it seems, is a long and not always easy journey. And it's a strange thing, but Luke never, ever, ever describes the disciples as being filled with joy until he reaches the story of Jesus' ascension. While he was blessing them, he withdrew from them and was carried up into heaven. And they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy. It took that long. It took that long. That long for the penny to drop. That long for resurrection faith finally to dawn. We all find ourselves somewhere on that journey, with its stages of faith and its patient dawning of hope. There are some of us here today who believe absolutely, who believe absolutely. There will be others here who have their doubts. Others will lie somewhere in between. Luke 24 reads to me as though Luke wants to tell us, it's okay. Wherever you are on this journey, it's okay. Easter faith is born in us in different ways and at different rates. Luke says without compromise that there is a truth of Easter. The tomb is empty. Christ is risen. It had to be so. It is so. Luke is adamant about that. Easter is true. But he also recognizes that it's hard for ordinary people to grasp and to hold on to this. And we will do it in different ways. Sometimes clear and confident. Sometimes only after much struggle. Resurrection faith will always be very personal and unique to each one of us. So if you are absolutely certain of the truth of Easter, good for you. But if you're struggling with it, that's okay as well. Because we're all on this journey. It can take time, because we need time. Because how can life ever be the same if Easter is true? It took time for Peter to grasp it. How much more for us? But with time, it grows within us. It does. For some, it is still bafflement before the empty tomb where the light is barely strong enough to see by. For some, it is a growing awareness of the risen Christ in the company of the church, the Word of God, and in the breaking of the bread. For some, it is the full light of luminous faith. And perhaps it is all these things, but at different times. Some days, our hearts burn within us. Other days, we are doubting or puzzled. We are at Emmaus today and back at the tomb tomorrow. That is the human condition. And if we're honest with ourselves, most of us, it's not easy. And sometimes our feelings and our beliefs and our faith is a very complex thing. But Luke says to us, it's okay. What's important is not that you have arrived, but that you are on that journey. as the disciples were. But we can be sure of one thing. The goal Luke wants us to reach is that we do come in time to believe in the risen Jesus, who is the hope and the salvation of the world. So yes, it does take time for us to grasp the wonder and the immensity of it, to really grasp that the world is now a different place because he is alive. Life has begun again for us and for the whole of creation, and we do not need to be afraid. Now, a sub-theme of this service was to do with Jesus' teaching about family. And I do hope perhaps in time I might be able to address it more fully than I can this morning. But let me say a few words about this in the light of Easter. One of the remarkable things about Jesus' teaching is how he was always concerned about widening the boundaries that we tend to erect. He was always about widening boundaries, not making them smaller. For example, he was open and welcoming to outcasts and sinners and unrespectable people that we might be inclined to ignore. Jesus was always widening the circle. And it's the same with families. Jesus came to preach that a new day had dawned, a new community of people committed to following God's will. And without wanting to denigrate in any sense the traditional view of what a family is, Jesus did want to expand the view as well. And so, well, there's a new kind of family too, which is much bigger, and it's the family of faith. God is the Father of us all. As part of this new day, Jesus called into being this new kind of family, a community of people committed to doing God's will, committed to knowing God and committed to serving God. And by doing so, sharing with their love for one another how they loved their Father in heaven. In Mark's gospel, Jesus asked the question, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And he answered by saying that it's those who do God's will who are his family. Not necessarily his human mother and siblings, but in a wider, broader, bigger sense, the family which is the family of disciples. So he totally redefined family in terms of faith. Membership in God's family, he said, is open to everyone, equally, without discrimination, based only on a willingness to know and to do God's will. This undercuts any temptations we may have to discriminate against people on any kind of basis whatsoever, gender, race, social class, age, or any of the other ways that we divide people. In God's family, there's none of that nonsense. And that brings us to Easter, back to Easter, and this journey called resurrection faith that the disciples have been on, that we are on too. A writer called Rodney Clapp wrote a book called Families at the Crossroads. And he notes how Jesus stretches the family beyond its natural state because his new kingdom transcends the old boundaries in which people love only their own. In Clapp's words, this is a quote, "It is through a new family, born of the Spirit, that God's kingdom breaks into our world." The family of God, you and me and all the others who seek to serve him, we are the family where we can learn together what resurrection really means. We are the family who stand together with those who believe absolutely and without question. But we are the family who also stand with those who are struggling and who doubt. And we stand with those who are one day in one camp and the next day in the other. We are the family who witness to the living Christ who has touched our lives and who has saved us. The journey of the resurrection story is the journey of a lifetime. And more than that, to embrace it, to understand it, to live it, to tell of it, In the words of Wesley, even eternity's too short. Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again. We witness to this resurrection faith together, we, you and I, the family of God.